Public health is a population-based field of science focused on preventing disease and promoting health. Every week, we will be engaging in interactive discussions and analyses of the latest public health issues affecting you and your communities all around the world. This is the Public Health Insight Podcast.
My name is Gordon, and I'm here with Linda, LaShawn, and a special guest who will be introduced later.
Before we move on, it is important to note that the views expressed in this podcast are our own and do not represent any of the organizations we work for or are affiliated with.
As the proportion of older adults of the general population continues to grow, it is important that society create an age-friendly environment that meets their complex needs. In this episode, we'll be discussing an article in Social Work Today titled Age-Friendly Health Systems, What Matters Most, by Sue Coyle, which makes the argument for a need to transition our health system to be more patient-centered and age-friendly. To discuss this important issue, we have the pleasure of speaking to a special guest. She is the leader of HGS Healthcare Clinical Practice. She has more than 20 years of experience in the healthcare industry with a diverse background in patient care, strategic disease management in the field of Alzheimer's disease and related dementias, rehabilitation operations, and integrated solutions designing. Since joining HGS in 2010, she has developed solutions for healthcare companies based in North America and Asia, and has experienced pioneering aging-in-place solutions. She has a Master of Science in Occupational Therapy from the University of Indianapolis, and a Bachelor of Occupational Therapy from Christian Medical College. Please welcome to the Public Health Insight Podcast, Kritika Srivats. Thank you for coming on to the Public Health Insight Podcast. We're going to have an engaging conversation to pick at your expertise. I know when you connected with us, we were looking to do something on loneliness and social isolation for seniors in the pandemic, but we already had an episode addressing those issues. So we're still happy that we're able to touch on maybe healthy aging more broadly and discuss some of the ways that the health system can facilitate healthy aging. So with that said, we know that older adults have a unique and complex needs, and many experts have expressed that these current health systems that we have today are not equipped to meet the increasing need and the demands of the elderly population. So why are we specifically concerned about older adults in this case, as opposed to just the general population?
Well, it's a very, very timely and interesting topic. As you mentioned earlier, there is a rapid rise in the aging population globally. What is today estimated to be about 8% of total population being elders in the next 30 years, it's expected to double and get up to 17% of total population. And with that rise, we also know economically, as well as some of the demands that it's going to pose, just with reduction in the caregiving population. So today, I think for every elderly individual, there's about 7 caregiving population that's available, and that includes both the family-based caregivers as well as formally trained caregivers. But over the next 30 years, that's reducing to about 3-to-1 proportion, and that's a significant reduction. So if you look at the infrastructure required to help an individual stay healthy, that there is going to be some huge demands on the society at large to sort of support that requirement. But then leaving that economic and demographic perspective aside for a second, if there are several surveys that talks about, if you ask an elderly what their preference is, what would they like in terms of managing their health and how they would like to have that help, most of them express the need to live and die at home as much as possible. Subsequently, that I think there's also a Stanford study that looked at how many people actually end up dying at home. home, and that's less than 20%. And that's an alarming ratio, right? About 80% of them die either in hospitals or in nursing homes. So if you look at that complexity, now I think, you know, just sort of makes sense that are we looking at what the elders want and creating that infrastructure required to help them stay at home as long as possible safely, and then have a meaningful planning ahead of time to meet what their end of life requirements are going to be. So I think that really sets the stage for why we need age-friendly healthcare system on the whole.
Right. So it sounds like it's not even, to your point that you just explained, it's not even that the hospital capacity specifically is the one that's going to be challenged. It's, we're talking about our communities. How do we even keep our elders in aging in place in the communities that they feel like they belong in the first place?
Absolutely. And a lot of research actually is really going into, you know, there's a framework which I would be happy to talk about today, is called Frailty Framework. And that one of the components of that is how to enable and empower caregivers, whether it's formally trained caregivers or family and neighbor caregivers, in that, you know, sort of working with the elder on what's required and leverage that community to the larger purpose of meeting that elderly where they are.
Perfect. So one thing I wanted to touch on, now that we're narrowing our focus to talk about these health systems that promote healthy aging, or you could call them age-friendly health systems or age-friendly care, are some kind of important components of these types of systems. So if we could speak to, I know from my research that I've done for this topic, one of the key things of an age-friendly health system is to ensure that it's patient-centered and it provides the older adult with the best possible care that they can get. I don't know if you could speak to some other elements from your experience of aging in place even, or age-friendly health systems.
Absolutely. So spending a few minutes on what the current health system looks at, right? I think globally, most healthcare systems are very well equipped to handle acute care and episodic care quite well. But what happens, and if you look at the profile of a typical elder, they are at any given time battling multiple physiological, biological conditions, you know, chronic medical conditions. But along with those biological conditions, you really cannot decouple the lifestyle issues that they are facing. So it could be other mental health issues. It could be income disparities that are impacting how they are able to adhere to their medication regimen, maybe, or a nutritional requirement, maybe. So we really cannot isolate an individual's healthcare conditions without addressing the person as a whole. And that's where most healthcare systems really fall short, most of it is because of how data doesn't give a holistic view into that individual. Care is being delivered in disparate healthcare settings. You know, primary care doesn't necessarily communicate with inpatient hospital care, which then doesn't necessarily communicate with long-term care or home health care. So there's all these data disparities that really goes into how we see that individual just with a single lens and a single perspective, whereas what they're battling day in and day out is a complex myriad of problems, starting with social connectedness, social isolation, mental health, that are either a result of that or exacerbated by these social isolation, and then all the other health conditions and economic conditions that they're having to deal with. So yeah, I think the number one need for us is to see that person as a whole, and person-centric care has one other component to it. Going back to, you know, 20% of the people really actually die at home, whereas all 80 to 90% of them want to die at home. If you just go back to that for a second, our care management should really help that individual, help our elders in understanding what are some of their frailty components, which if left unattended to, is going to, you know, help them progress faster to needing a dependent care, and then see if that's meaningful and purposeful for them. We take out the context of meaningfulness and purposefulness, and any amount of interventions may have, in the short term, reversed that frailty component or the dependencies. But then for long-term sustainability, it really has to be something that the elder sees and perceives as something important to them. And incorporating that into our care management is also just as important in meeting that person where they are.
Right.
Yeah, that's a great point, Krithika. And I'm almost wondering, you mentioned that, you know, these health systems are built on focusing on more acute care and, you know, not really having a focus on those complex situations that are really associated with elderly care. So I'm almost wondering now, why has the system built, why has it been built that way? Why has it been built in response to managing acute care rather than more complex issues that the elderly face?
I'll give you my perspective, you know, anecdotally speaking. So one part of it is technology challenges. And again, you know, today we know over the last decade, today is probably where we have the most integrated technology amongst, you know, in the entire history. So you would think that some of these challenges of tackling data and providing a more holistic profile of that elderly would become easier. But then even with the development in technology, there are still interoperability issues, how data can be transmitted from one healthcare system to the other. There's significant issues with that. So that is a very big component of why people still don't have a total visibility of the individual. In some of the not so well-organized healthcare system, the patient still is a custodian of their medical records, and our healthcare system is slightly different in that the provider is responsible for the maintaining the profile of that patient that they're treating. So because of the inability to transfer records across and hand off to each of the different care settings that the elderly is going to get care, there is that lack of total visibility of the individual. Having said that, there's a lot more progress is happening in terms of combining data sources and looking beyond just the medical information to take a total perspective on the individual. So for example, marketing and consumer spend data is actually quite powerful because that gives us a lot more information prospectively in terms of, does the elderly have a car? I know, are they paying for a car payment? Are they able to make their rental payment? So it sort of gives us a little bit more information into some of the economic, social spending. And, you know, as a result of that, there's several research models, analytical models that's come out in terms of how to interpret that and integrate that data into risk stratification of individuals. Mm. So we've come a long way. We still have a long way to go yet. But I think the part that you are specifically asking about why the system is so disconnected is because historically we've been trained to address clinical outcomes as if it's standalone from what the elderly is going through. And we spoke about that just a minute ago. You can't decouple that out of an individual, but then clinical outcome is what is being measured by almost all healthcare systems. So if you look at quality of care data that needs to be reported, these are standalone clinical metrics. You know, how is diabetes, if you have 1,000 people with diabetes, how is the provider ensuring that they're being referred to complications from that diabetes and making sure that the individual has all of their preventive services from the diabetes standpoint? But there is no quality reporting required to look beyond what is contributing to that person not getting their diabetic care. So I think fundamentally our system is sort of set up and it's taking a long time to break some of those barriers to see the person as a whole.
We lack a lot of integration in our system, which then relates to how we view an individual also in a very siloed way. So maybe a more integrated system leads to a more integrated view of the person.
Right. And I think to touch on, I'm glad that you, Krithika, you brought up the clinical outcomes piece, because as we know, the healthcare system is very kind of disease focused. So it's about treating a disease where when we talk of things more holistically, we're looking more at the health promotion, public health side of things, which includes disease management and preventing diseases from occurring in the first place. So I think what the whole point of what we're saying is the healthcare system was designed to kind of treat illnesses. And it seems like for whatever reason or another, because it looks acutely at issues, it's not equipped. And I think they're more designed to focus on acute care rather than prevention.
And that's a very good point. While, preventive, prospectively identifying who is at risk for, having a long-term risk from getting a disease, as opposed to also just look and working on prevention, there's also a lack of focus on if that individual gets a disease, are we going to treat it clinically from just managing the medications and recommending the right type of procedures for that, as opposed to building that infrastructure that is required for them to manage that illness for the rest of their lives. And I think that's a big disconnect we have. And I'll just give you an example just from my experience. I've been doing a lot of work in the field of Alzheimer's disease globally. And every place that we've done any interventions, the first and foremost thing is at primary care level, there's a gap in understanding what is dementia and really engaging that caregiver from day one, saying, once this person has been diagnosed to have dementia, how do you help them understand what is yet to come and come prepared for managing some of those day in and day out? And that's where the system really breaks down, because the primary care physicians just prescribe whatever memory enhancing medication, and somehow the family goes back home thinking, oh, everything's going to be handy dandy, and needless to say, within the next year or so, or with an adverse event that might have happened, the person's just taken a nosedive to the next level of dementia, and now the family's unprepared to really handle what's happening. The patient's going to get lost, and how do you, not knowing how to manage maybe activating a neighborhood watch, proactively putting an ID bracelet on them. There's so many other things we could have done with that whole system, the whole community, the whole family and caregiving system. But we totally ignore that and just prescribe these medication and send them home as if that's going to take care of it all. I think that's where the disconnect is. It's one is preventive, but then preventive from what is yet to come, and how do you prepare everyone and see what's coming and talk to them about saying, what do you want to do? Do you have anyone else who can engage and stay engaged with some of what is yet to come? And if not, how would you like the care of your mother or father or aunt or whoever you're dealing with? And here are the type of special care units that are available. Some are focused on activity-based. Some are very custodial. But depending on the stage of dementia they have, here are the recommendations for that transition. We don't address any of that today. And I think when we talk about a holistic care management, that's the missing piece.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up holistic care management and the example of dementia, because it reminded me of this model I found when I was researching age-friendly health systems, which is the 4 M's framework of age-friendly care. And what this really is it focuses on a patient-centered approach to meet the needs of caregivers and families. And the 4 M's include what matters, medication, mentation, which is what dementia would fall under, and mobility. So we can see here that there are already systems in place of different healthcare providers recognizing the needs of their patients and caregivers and trying to implement these evidence-based approaches. So yeah, so it just goes to show that there is a need to meet, there is a demand, I should say, in terms of the healthcare needs of older adults. And we have to focus on these individual elements that you're saying are important to these elderly people, especially with the qualitative piece that you mentioned. You were talking about is more quantitative driven in terms of clinical outcomes, whereas we need some more qualitative information to see if these systems are meeting the needs of these elderly patients. So I'm really glad that you touched on those key points. So with that said, I wanted to bring us into some of the kind of best practices for, I guess you could call it, geriatric care management in a way that promotes healthy aging. The 4Ms approach, some of the, you know, the 4M, the components of the 4Ms seem to be pretty common across health systems. But the challenge, as you mentioned before, is that these systems have to be integrated. You talked about there's a gap between, in terms of continuity of care, when if you have a patient with multiple comorbidities and they have different specialists, are those specialists talking to each other? How are they talking to each other? You know, do they know the medication that their patients are being prescribed if the EMR systems aren't really integrated either? So there's a lot of gaps there that create this barrier for healthy aging and healthy aging systems. So I'm wondering if you could speak to more some of those components that we could use to overcome these barriers. Is there an interdisciplinary approach that you're aware of that we can use to overcome some of these challenges, especially as it goes to these community-based initiatives that can help healthy aging in place?
Absolutely. One thing, just want to quickly draw some parallels from that 4M approach. I think the frailty framework, well-researched by the Johns Hopkins Institute, and since then been globally sort of researched and applied to, is a framework that looks at accumulation of dependencies. I think I just want to call attention to that. Essentially, age is a factor in how people need help. But then research suggests that the correlation of age as a standalone metric towards needing dependent care is less. And along with age, if there are these other frailty measures, starting with sensory deficits and mobility challenges and endurance and lack of social engagement, lack of caregiving support and nutrition, which is a big component of it. So there are these frailty measures, and I think the accumulation of dependencies as a result of how age, you know, somebody could be younger, and they could have had a healthy lifestyle. And by virtue of that, as they get older, the accumulation of dependencies may not necessarily hit them till they are much into the aging process. Versus somebody when they are younger and they're pre-diabetic or they have, you know, pancreatic conditions, things like that. And then on top of it, you throw in low income and other socioeconomic conditions. That accumulation of dependencies really, you know, comes on at an early stages when they're starting to age. So just want to call that out, because when we look at age, it's not a one size fits all. And so the level of integration required to manage these individuals cannot be using just age as an indicator. They have to be prepared to look at the context of what is making that person require this next level of dependency. Which of these frailty measures is having a higher impact on that individual? Is it a mobility challenge? And is that mobility challenge, and they call this a cycle of frailty, and there are several frameworks that talk about the different cycles of frailty. But essentially, it's look at it this way. You have an elder who's unable to, who's having some age-related, you know, anorexia, and they have some nutritional deficiencies, which results in having lower muscle mass, which results in, you know, lower gait speed, that results in a fear of falling, which results to, you know, leads to lesser activity, and that leads to, you know, lower social connectedness. So it's like becomes a vicious cycle. And sort of knowing where this individual is in that cycle, and then bringing in that right discipline or a combination of that interdisciplinary or multidisciplinary team to engage with them and seeing which of these frailty components can be reversed, which ones need to be managed by removing the barriers, and then which ones need to be long-term sustainable and making it meaningful so that we see this or we prevent or reduce the speed at which the frailty is going to progress. So I think, you know, the best practices around that is really having a more holistic assessment process, good predictive analytics that looks at what are the propensity for this individual to you know, go down that path of frailty and the dependency requirement, mm-hmm. and then bring in the team of occupational therapists and physical therapists and nutritionists and one component what we see in our care management programs where we've had a lot of success is in building using the community resources and community healthcare workers mm-hmm. to build that trust and bridge the divide between the healthcare system and the individual. And that, those are some powerful techniques that we need to consider when we're looking at, you know, an integrated healthcare system for such individuals.
Awesome. I think that opened my eyes up a bit, because if you look, I think what you're saying is if you look at age in of itself as a risk factor, you might miss the other more modifiable risk factors, like you said, such as, you know, is the patient's nutrition good? Is their home set up in a safe way that prevents them from tripping and falling? What are they adhering to their medications? Mobility and transportation issues. Those are some subcomponents that may or may not be related to aging that you're saying you should consider in an integrative way. So I appreciate your take on that.
Absolutely. I think social determinants of health, needless to say, there's very high correlation of STOH on frailty progression for sure, as well as chronic condition, mm-hmm. Worsening of chronic conditions. And there's a lot of very broad-based literature and research around that. Couple of things I would definitely say that, going back to my earlier point, is bringing in the patient in that decision-making process very early on. We've seen, and I'd just like to take a couple of examples. I used to manage a rehab center where we saw post-stroke patients, and one thing that's always, and some of you who are in this field would know, there's about a 30% incidence of depression in people with stroke. So you bring this person into the rehabilitation program, and if this depression goes unidentified or untreated, that impact on recovery is significant. Most people with untreated depression post-stroke actually have very suboptimal recovery versus the ones who have been, who had the opportunity to be diagnosed and treated for it. But if you look at establishing goals of, we tend to want to get the patient back to where they came from without realizing what they came from, because when an acute event happens and they go into a hospital, we have no understanding of where they came from. And so a lot of times people are living in a two-story apartment, and they were climbing up and down and going and getting their own groceries and everything before the stroke. But they were doing all of that because at the time there was no frailty. They were totally fine, except just having to manage day-to-day conditions. And now post the stroke, that's completely changed. That type of talking to, bringing them back into the perspective of where do you want to go back? Are you going to be able to go back to that two-story apartment? If not for that, mm-hmm. Do you have anybody who's going to help you move into a ground floor apartment? Is that something we can, and occupational therapists and physical therapists, we are famous for wanting to do home assessments based on prior level of function. Sometimes we have to put two and two together. Prior level of function is very, very different. Mm. Post the stroke, it's going to be very different. So making that connection and bringing the patient and their family early on into the discussion, saying that this is how it's going to look like. So let's work towards the new normal, the new level of function, not necessarily a prior level of function. And sort of, I think from a best practice standpoint, I cannot emphasize how much that shared decision making, that collaborative goal setting is important in our overall care of the elderly.
Yeah, exactly. And that's a great point you made, Kritika. And it almost makes me wonder, there's a lot of discussion about experts saying, should the whole system be changed overnight, or should there be incremental changes over time, like one unit at a time? So I was kind of wondering, will current systems be molded and adapted, or does it have to be completely overhauled? And also to that, what role do you or HGS play in, I guess, the care management for the aging population, if any?
I think individually, if you look at it, there are several success stories, such as the PCMH, and I know ACOs are trying to, the Accountable Care Organizations are trying to do something similar. But I think we are a long way off in being able to replicate the best practices. And some of the constraints, while a lot of the time we blame data, I think a lot of the constraints really is knowing how to use well-researched, evidence-based approaches in a manner that's going to sustain the improvement. And the very second we bring cost into it, cost is a short-term, it's a short-term incentive or a short-term outcome that we're driving towards. Somebody could be, you know, in care management or could be identified as a high risk from a cost perspective because they are using they're managing their medication well, which means they're on that medication every single day, they're getting all their lab tests, etc. Hence, the cost of managing that individual is pretty high as compared to another person who has a fairly high cost, but that's because they keep going to the emergency room or the hospital three times, four times a year. So from a cost perspective, when you're looking at it, it's easy to put both these individuals in the same risk category of risk three, but then the person one is managing and doing everything they can to stay out of that hospital, and versus the person two really needs to be looked at and figuring out why are they coming to the emergency room. Is it because they don't have a housing shelter or they don't have the food that they would need to survive, and is the hospital their home, you know, their temporary home? So sort of breaking down and looking at the individuals outside of cost implications is a key. And many systems, I think, have a long way to go from looking at outcome beyond just cost metrics. So if you look at our care management program, so HGS has been providing population health management program through our acquisition called Access Point Health, and we've been providing care for millions of members across its multi-pronged strategy of engaging the members and helping them identify the most appropriate level of care setting that they would need to go to when they have a symptom, as well as identifying what type of risk do they have in really utilizing higher cost facilities and dependent care facilities, and then proactively managing them through our various integrated care tracks. We call them care tracks. So it spans across medication management to reducing hospital readmissions to ongoing remote patient monitoring. But a couple of things I do want to highlight. I think any good care management program should look at multimodal engagement with the members. There is this belief that elderly are not tech savvy, but COVID has sort of proven otherwise. I came across a few studies from California that said that because of telehealth, being available nowadays to almost everybody, the no-shows for several mental health conditions have drastically dropped from 60% to less than 11%. Those are all like alarming statistics. Mm-hmm. And I think engaging members through these various digital channels, including text messages and having that community resource, community health worker sit with the elderly with an iPad, talking to their care manager somewhere else, it absolutely makes a huge difference in staying connected. And also a couple of other things is remote patient monitoring. There is a place for biometric monitoring using Bluetooth-enabled devices, IoT-enabled devices, to see which alert is going to push them to that hospitalization or the next level of care, and how to proactively identify that and triage that to the right physician and the right type of healthcare system. All of that, or that right level of care, all of that is very critical when you're looking at a whole person care management. So that's sort of how we approach our population health management. It's and removing barriers, whether it's a social barrier or an economic barrier or a food or transportation barrier to medication barriers. We have a very person-centric holistic care management program. So that's sort of where we are. And we're also looking at a very comprehensive aging in place solution specifically to address the frailty progression and prevention of frailty progression.
Awesome. Thank you for sharing your thoughts on this incredibly important topic, especially I found myself getting lost in there with my love for technology. And I particularly appreciate the piece where you brought in, you know, there's a kind of a need to modernize the approach a bit and leverage these technological solutions out there to integrate those into care management plans. So I definitely appreciate, especially the last bit there on your thoughts on how to integrate the system. So with this said, I'll bring everything to a close here. I'd like to thank you again for coming on the podcast. I think our listeners are going to benefit from your kind of knowledge that you shared on, you know, the need for us kind of a systems thinking approach to geriatric care management, if you will. And I'd like to give you an opportunity for any final thoughts or words or takeaway messages.
No, thank you so much. I think, we need to be talking about this more and really help people see the importance of not seeing clinical outcome as the be-all and end-all when it comes to elderly care management. And I think the work that you're doing, and I heard many of your other podcasts, and it's very spot on in that it really needs to integrate and meet the patients where they are, meet the elderly member where they are. And that is very different than where most of us are. And knowing the difference and helping them do what is important to them through meaningful and purposeful activity-based engagement and really bringing together the whole care management as a care managing team, as a unit, and help them be prepared for what is yet to come and then proactively provide those preventive resources and referrals, and whether that's home assessment or durable medical equipment or better nutrition or meals on wheels and whatever it is, really having that whole caregiving unit be part of these decision-making process and then provide those preventive as well as, you know, those event prevention services holistically. We just need to keep talking about it. I think it's the need of the hour. And thank you for the work that you're doing in this area.
Well, thank you for sharing your knowledge.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Public Health Insight Podcast, your go-to space for informative conversations, inspiring community action. If you enjoy our content and would like to stay up to date, follow us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. To learn more about our community initiatives and how you can support us, visit our website at thepublichealthinsight.com. Join the PHI community and let's make public health viral.